Patterns of happiness are frameworks that always work. They are tools and practices that will bring permanent change to your life for better. We're not looking for temporary solutions. We change and transform. We practice what we preach, and we're gonna share it with you here. Be careful, because you can become seriously happier today. I'm very, very happy to see you.
Thank you.
It looks as if you have almost summer over there in Munich.
Today was a warm day. The other days it was a bit cold.
I would like to share with you that you are almost like a spiritual godfather to me.
Oh, really?
While I was translating for you, I've met my wife, and she sends you a lot of love. And we now have a baby too. So thanks to you.
You have a baby now. And you live in Kiev still? Or?
No, I don't live in Kiev for a very long time. Also, while I was translating for you, one guy offered me a job managing his sales team. And then he offered me an upgrade. So I moved to Cyprus, and I was managing two holdings that he had in Cyprus. So this also happened thanks to you, and thanks to work that you do. For me, many, many things are really connected with you and with what I just learned by your side and with people whom I met with you.
Great, very nice.
Yeah, so thank you for that.
To set the ground for the conversation, I would like to talk a little bit about you and how you came to be and to do what you're doing right now. And also I would like to talk about family constellations as a tool and loss that it brings to the lives of people. Because for me personally, it was really transformative. And I think, I mean, in my opinion, my sincere opinion, I'm not trying to flatter. I think everyone needs to meet you. If they want to grow up, they definitely need to meet you. Can you please share how you started your spiritual journey, whether you really believe in this thing that the healer is the healed, and how you finally met family constellations that became a really big part of your life?
So basically, I studied psychology, and early in my life, I became interested in meditation. And then very soon, I met Osho, my spiritual master, spent a lot of time with him and in India and in his communities. I did trainings, but I also started learning to work with people in this way, where a therapist is not just an authority using a method, but how to meet people as a friend who accompanies somebody for a little while. So to be there as an authentic person, not just as a therapist. So this is what I learned basically with Osho over many years. And I worked with many different therapeutic methods over the time. I did deep tissue work, I did Neuroreichian work, I did counseling, I did energy work, male-female work, which I am still doing. And then in the end of the 90s, I met Family Constellation, which I have been working with since then. Not only, but a big part of my work is with Family Constellation. And through Family Constellation, basically, one learns to see life and other people in a bigger context, in a bigger perspective, which is very good also for my own learning, because personally, I'm actually quite a judgmental person. So with this work, I learned to open myself and see other people in a bigger context. And that doing that takes you also beyond judgment. It means you, by understanding someone's field and context, you start opening yourself to that person. In other words, it helps you to open your heart to another person when you understand his whole life situation and context, and also family background and collective energy background. So that was very helpful for me personally, and then also in my work. So since then, I'm actually doing this work. Another thing is, in Family Constellation, is actually the way I do it. It is not just as a therapy, but it is to help you to say, to find a deeper yes to life, and to how life is and how everything is. So it's actually more related, in my view, to meditation, because meditation is the art of saying yes and relaxing into the isness of our existence. For me, family constellation stands on the border between therapy and meditation. And that's what especially interests me also. Because therapy in general is too much concerned about changing things, changing people and getting people what they want personally. But really, we have to learn to relax into our isness and to, in fact, learn to let go of what we personally want and agree to how life is and how life moves us, and understanding that we are part of it and we cannot have any personal desires or intentions or however you want to call it, but we have to learn to accept ourselves as being part of a greater whole. And I think family constellation very much helps one to do that.
You said that you met Osho in the early 80s. Did you spend all the time before he actually left the body with him, or were you coming to him and then leaving, coming and leaving?
I was working, so I couldn't afford to spend all the time with him. So sometimes I spent like half a year with him, and then I went again to my country to work. I worked with people, I did courses and groups and sessions. I was in a situation where I had to earn money, so I earned money and then I went back and forth. And that's also good, because in that way you stay connected to life and to the world as it is, and then you can refresh yourself in the Buddha field. No, that's how I did for many years.
I've heard that some people who stayed with him for many years without actually leaving him, they had this idea that they would get enlightened by his sight and then they would just like live this life forever. But then when he left his body in 1991, they were shocked because it has changed their plans. Yeah,
because we get too much impressed by the ideas of enlightenment, also sannyasins and spiritual people. And then the idea of enlightenment becomes another greed or ambition or desire. And then actually, what is the difference between wanting to be rich or wanting to be enlightened? It is the same desire, basically. Unconsciously, you get into that when you go on a spiritual journey. We usually got into this kind of spiritual desires. This got a big hit for many people, and that's why many people got also frustrated and disappointed, because they didn't get what they wanted. But actually, the work of a master is not to give you what you want, but to take away everything from you and leave you alone, naked, and see yourself as you are. It's not about reaching somewhere, really. It's about being here and now. But we all didn't quite understand it at that time, I think. That's why we had to go through it. So it was a big teaching.
You said that the idea is basically to relax and to agree to everything that comes in our direction. Do you believe that we still have a little gap for our free will, or it doesn't matter at all?
Well, the idea of free will is basically a bit false. I like to compare it like when you are a little leaf on a tree. What kind of free will this leaf has? The leaf is part of the tree. The question of free will actually doesn't really arise. It's only when you see yourself as separate from the whole tree, then you think, I have a free will. But actually, we are part of the whole. The question of free will doesn't arise. We are it. Osho used to call it, he said, we are neither dependent nor independent. We are interdependent. We are part of something. Western idea of free will is basically false. In fact, in reality, this question doesn't arise.
I guess it's still sometimes hard to agree with that. Everyone wants to feel that they're capable to change. But I understand.
Yeah, it's our illusion, you know. This is how we grow up, you know. We come from oneness. As a child, there's no ego. And then when the child grows up, then it starts developing its ego. And that the ego develops by saying no. That's why when a child is 3 years old, it always practices to say no. So to develop his own personality. And that's actually a separation. And then our journey is to move beyond that and again come to oneness and to feel ourselves as part of something and to let go of our ego. That is actually all our journey is like that. Some people succeed in being able to do that and others not. They have to come back in another life and then practice again, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it is about letting go of yourself. When you want to say talk about freedom, it's not freedom to do what you want, but the real freedom is the freedom from yourself.
If we return to family constellations, as far as I understand, there are some universal laws that rule our life and that we actually learn through family constellations. Can we please assume that listeners don't know what family constellations are? Can you please share what these universal laws are, the laws of the family?
The person who developed family constellation, Bert Hellinger, he basically made a discovery, quite important discovery. He discovered some laws in human interaction, some universal laws, just like laws of physics. And they apply to our human relations. And basically, these are laws how our mind and our unconscious mind functions. And this is part of being a human being. And it is not different in any culture or in any country. I travel many countries, and these laws are actually universal. And they are quite simple. It's actually one of them is just to feel that we have a sense of belonging. That means we are born in a collective, we are born in a family, we are born in a collective field, in a country, and we develop a certain bonding to that. Because of this bonding, our mind, for example, feels disturbed unconsciously when somebody of this field is excluded, forgotten, or judged, or sent out. Then something deep down, maybe not so consciously, but in our unconscious, is disturbed. And our unconscious tries to include or bring that person back into the field. And that comes because we as human beings, we have a deep sense of bonding and belonging somewhere. This is how we are born. Child is born with a natural impulse to bond to his parents. It's not a choice. So we are not choosing to bond to our parents. This is a given factor by nature. And because of this bonding, our mind also develops around this bonding. So when we grow up, we start bonding to a peer group, to friends, eventually to a partner, we create families. So we try in our life to bond to somebody. And if this bonding is disturbed or somebody is not allowed to be part of this field, for example, a family member, then it creates a disturbance. And that is often at the cause of many people suffering, actually. So maybe consciously we reject one of our family, but in our unconscious, there is a disturbance created. And in family constellation, we bring this unconscious to our attention, we bring it to our consciousness, and we create a field, and we call this a constellation, where we bring different people from a group into an open space and they become representatives for certain people of our past or of our family. And when they stand in this field, we can observe certain patterns or relationship behavior between them. And that reveals actually these unconscious laws that determine our human relations. So a constellation makes the laws of human relationships visible.
Family constellations deals with our family members also. And you've shared that you traveled around the world a lot. So I have two questions in regards of that. Also, because I'm the father now, what would you call a healthy family? What are the prerequisites for that, for the child to grow as whole as it's only possible?
This is a good question because you assume that there is something like a perfect family, but there isn't. It's a concept. every family, every relationship is part of another field. And that means certain things work, and then there are certain challenges and difficulties. So there is no ideal family, really. It doesn't really exist. There's always challenges because life presents us with certain events, and then they challenge us, and we are having only a certain ability to handle these events in a conscious and good way. So because we are not able to deal with certain life traumas, let's say, or difficulties, it creates a disturbance in our field, and then we pass it on to other people. And then other people have to deal with that, like our children. That is just the way human life is. I would not try to be, for example, a good father or a good husband, because it is futile. The more you try to be a good father, the worse you become. So rather than trying to be a good father, try to be an authentic human being. That is better. Because there is always some challenges, and we all have some defects, which we have our limitations. If we try to be too good, we create actually inside ourselves, we create a stress and a tension. So it's much better to learn to find a deep yes to yourself as you are, and that will have the biggest benefit on the people who are around you, your wife and your children. Trying to be good is a false goal.
For when I had the chance to translate for you, it was 5 years in a row. The last time I remember, it was in Turkey. I was translating the training, and I remember that I thought that that's something that people actually should learn at university, because this is the foundation for life, for actual life.
I think it's a good work, and it's true. It's good to learn something about human relations, because in our life we already assume, because we are biologically capable of giving birth to children, we assume that we know what it means to be a father or a mother, but actually we only know it biologically, but psychologically we often don't. So it would be good to learn what it means to be a father or a mother or a husband or a wife or a businessman, or to learn about human relation. I think it would be a good subject in university, and I agree.
In your opinion, from what you see around the world, what does it mean to be really happy and really mature?
For me, maturity has to do with consciousness. The more conscious a person is, the more mature he is. Normally, we just grow old. But growing old doesn't mean to grow up. So there can be people who are mature, who are very young. And there can be people who are very old, who are very immature. The age is not related to maturity. The consciousness is related to maturity. And that means the more we develop our awareness, our consciousness, and that's how maturity grows. That's my understanding.
Do you have a vision for happiness in general? Like, what is true happiness for a person? Can only a mature person be happy then?
I mean, I would like to quote Osho here, because this is also my exploration, so I'm not saying that I have reached the state where I can answer that question about what happiness is. Osho used to say, when he was asked about this, he said, we only think we are happy. Only a person who is very conscious can be truly happy. An unconscious person is only dreaming. He is only dreaming that he is happy. He's not truly happy. It's like you have a sweet dream about being in paradise, but it is just a dream. So whether you have a beautiful dream or a nightmare doesn't really make any difference. In both cases, you're dreaming. True happiness is connected to consciousness. And everybody else who says, I'm so happy, is just in a beautiful dream.
Am I happy? Am I really happy? Or am I dreaming?
Yeah, we have to examine that all the time.
You've seen very different cultures, and in a way you also investigated very different families. Do you feel that any specific tradition or any specific nation has better traditions or like better skills to nurture children for them to mature?
Not really. I would say in some areas of life, simple people are more natural still, which is better. They are not so alienated from what is natural. In our modern world and civilized world, we often move very far away from what is natural. I think natural is better, but it doesn't necessarily mean that people who still behave, who are simple and natural, that they are more conscious. They are just like a child who is also behaving naturally, but it is still unconscious. So that's why this kind of behavior, one loses that, no? One loses that innocence of a child. And that's what you see in many cultures. They change and they lose their original innocence, and then they become civilized, you know? And then they lose their naturalness. And we in our advanced countries, we have gone very far away from our naturalness. That's why there is also such a need, I think, for spirituality and for meditation, because spirituality and meditation is the urge to find again the lost innocence. So I think different countries, different cultures are just in a different state of that process. You know, some cultures or countries, they are still more primitive and maybe they're therefore more natural and it looks more original, more natural. And some other countries, they have gone more further away from that. But they're all going to lose it. So eventually, it's like a child development. You lose your innocence and then you feel alienated from yourself, and then you go on a spiritual journey and search to find it again. At least if you're a little intelligent. If you're not intelligent, you don't go on the search, of course.
An eternal circle. I have a question about the family dynamics of parents and children. In Russia, for example, there is still this idea when parents hope for their children to support them when they're becoming older, when they're growing up. And in US, it's a kind of a different tradition when parents really want to separate from their children, kind of trying to push them into their grown-up life faster. Can I ask you whether there is any perspective from your side on this, how this separation should happen? I realize that it also depends upon awareness and consciousness in many instances, but maybe there is some healthy dynamic that you noticed and you see.
In a certain way, one could say the American law, for example, where children don't have the right of inheritance, is better. Because children are forced to be independent, which is better. In Europe, children have a right for inheritance. So in a way, they can only always count on that they get something more. And that keeps them in a certain way a little more immature. It keeps them bonded to their parents. And they cannot, in that sense, they are not forced to develop their own strengths and power. So in that sense, the way it's done in America, it looks better. But of course, the question is also love, you know. The question is, you can kick somebody out just because you don't care, or you can keep somebody out because you care. So that is the real question, you know. So if parents kick their children out, do they do it because they care, or do they do it because they don't care? Or if they bind them to themselves, do they care for their children, or do they care for themselves because they don't want to be lonely? That's why they bind their children to themselves. That's what I see often also, no? So parents, they don't want to feel alone and lonely. That's why they bind their children to themselves. So it's always a question of, do you think about yourself or do you think what is best for the other? And in love, in true love, you always think what is good for the other.
Is it one of the definitions for love then?
Yeah, I would say this is one aspect. In love, you don't think about yourself, you think about the other. You think what is good for the other.
One more question about children. As you've been so long in Sanyas, if you started in 1980, that means that I still wasn't even born then, and you are working on yourself for at least 40 years. Have you seen any schools or any form of education for children that works, or maybe Sanyas schools that worked and that still exist?
I don't know any school that still exists, but I know that we had a Sanyas schools where children were living together and being educated together in a kind of community. I think it is a good vision to grow children, not only in the small family, but in a communal setting. But in our world, in our life, it is very rare. I don't see that much. Maybe there are some communities. I know some community in Spain also where I give trainings, where is a community and many parents and families, they all live together. And then the children, they grow up there together. And I think that gives the children a certain freedom, and they're less dependent on their parents, and they have, I think it is healthy for children to grow up not only in a small family, but they have many uncles and friends and other adults and other children around. They learn more, they have more freedom. Because when you look at it in a normal family, the children are the most repressed people in the world. Nobody is as repressed as a child. And when you are just with your parents, it is bound to happen. So community is a vision of the future, actually.
I was the only child in my family. And my wife, she has a brother. And happily, he spends a lot of time with us. He's my age, but he doesn't have family right now. I see the benefit of her having a brother. I was definitely much more arrogant and egoistic. And for me, even when we just got together with her and the child was born, it was difficult for some time. Not because I didn't want it, but because I didn't know other ways.
The moment a child is born, your original intimacy is lost. Suddenly there's another person. So you're not only the only one anymore with your wife, there is another person now. So you have to share your wife with somebody else. So that is gross, you know. In the beginning, the two of you are alone, so you are more focused on each other. And when a child is born, your energy goes to another. So your love actually expands. And I think that's beautiful, because actually love and relationship has to grow, and it has to grow from closeness to wideness. So love has to always expand. And even if you don't have children, you have to share your love with other people. You can't keep your original intimacy. It is bound to change. And it has to be like this. And I think it's beautiful. And that's how our relationships grow, because they become wider. And they include more and more people. And that's actually how it should be. Even Mira and me, we didn't have children, but we worked with people a lot. So the moment we were working, our energy, we were not just the two of us, but we were sharing with other people. So the energy expands towards others. And that's actually how a relationship should grow.
One of the last questions to ask. There is this theory. It's more a social one, but still I would like to ask your opinion about that. When we become more intimate with each other, there is less space for passion and sexuality between the partners. Do you agree with this? Do you see it as true?
Well, this is a too general question, but when I have clients and they have sexual problems, it can have many reasons, you know. Basically, sex is never a problem. The problem is always somewhere else. It is in our conditioning and our upbringing. So there is no problem about our, when we are natural, there is no problem. And of course, when you're long time together, your sexuality has to change because it is just the beginning. Yeah? In the beginning, you're hot, you're passionate, and after a while, this energy has to change and it has to become more heartful. So the energy moves from the sex more to the heart, and that's how it grows. So it moves from the body to the psychology, and then eventually even further than that. If you just stay on the sexual level, there is not much development. So sexuality has to change at a certain eventually. But that doesn't mean there is anything wrong with it, you know. Even if you feel you have a strong sexuality and then you live that, I don't think there's any problem with that. But eventually, in its own time, if you live it out fully without repressing it, you're going to grow beyond it. The time you noticed, oh, sex has left me. It's like in childhood, you know, you have your teddy bear with you all the time and you can't sleep without it. And if you allow yourself fully to enjoy your teddy bear, there's a moment where you suddenly grow beyond it, and then your teddy bear is going to the garbage. And then you have grown beyond it. But it's not leaving a wound. It's not utter repression that you repress anything in yourself. It is just you have outlived it. And I think with sexuality it is the same. Just because in our upbringing and in our life, sexuality is so repressed. That's why it's never outlived. That's why even people in very old age, they dream and think about sex all the time because they never lived it fully. So because we have not been natural with our sexuality, that's why we never grow beyond it. That's really the reason. Otherwise, if you live your sexuality fully and consciously, at some point, it's no more so important. And that's how it should be, actually.
I promise you, this is going to be the last question right now. You just shared that people don't outlive their sexuality. And definitely one of the reasons is because they have seen certain patterns in their family. And in my family, I haven't learned about sex until I actually found out that I have my genitalia by myself. I wasn't really told by my parents, and we have never had a conversation. Is there any advice for parents, for young parents especially, on how to introduce this to children, and whether it should be introduced, in your opinion?
My feeling is children don't need to be taught anything. They naturally will, when the time is ripe, they will inquire. And then the parents should respond. And the child will ask a question about sex, then the parents should respond. Just like eventually children will be interested in spirituality, but they are not allowed to, you don't wait from very early on. They are taught about God and all kind of religion and nonsense. And they are not allowed to come to the point where naturally they want to inquire themselves. And that's what I think should be, that children should be left by themselves, should not be taught about these things, and they will eventually naturally by themselves inquire. And then you share what your experience is as a parent. But that's not a teaching. You just respond to a child's interest. But parents, usually they can't wait and they feel they have to teach and they burden the child, actually. So I think it is the same with religion, with sexuality. It's children, at least the first 6-7 years, they should be left wild.
Thank you.
Then they will inquire, and then it's natural.
Thank you very much, from all of my heart, for everything I learned from you for today.
To talk to you, thank you. I like questions. There were Thank you. Good questions. It will be nice to see you again.
Did you enjoy this episode? If yes, please rate Happiness Patterns podcast on iTunes. It helps us invite even more great, great guests. Find us on Instagram as Happiness Patterns. We post almost every other day, and it's something that you will not find anywhere else. You will hear from us soon. Bye-bye.